Good afternoon, everyone, on a soggy Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. We're going to be talking today with Gary Motley about this weekend's Juno Jazz and Classics concert. We've got Reed Stoops, Eric Boras, and Jamie Waste here. They're going to talk about a new fund that's been set up to support parks, trails, and recreation in Juno. Also going to be highlighting an upcoming writer's workshop, and we'll get the details about the Alaska Youth Choir performance that's upcoming. That's all ahead, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, so much more coming up on A Juno Afternoon. That's all ahead right after we hear from National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders of South and Eastern tribes were among dozens of people to testify this week in Washington before the House Appropriations Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies Subcommittee. Chief of the Catawba Nation, William Harris, says funding opportunities are needed to assist tribes that do not have gaming as revenue. Harris says his South Carolina tribe announced last week the shutting down of its bingo hall due to a number of restrictions, including tax payouts to the state. The operation had grossed $14 million, but Harris says the tribe lost money due to the restrictions.
So we want to achieve economic self-sufficiency, but we have been financially crushed by the unexpected restrictions placed in our Settlement Act at the insistence of the state of South Carolina. We have to find another path. Many tribes are economic engines in such areas as tourism, energy, small business development, and commercial services, among many others. However, limited access to capital and investment financing remain substantial barriers to economic development in Indian Country. We struggle with uniquely burdensome federal registrations, restrictions and regulations, poor infrastructure, and other challenges that limit our economy from flourishing.
Harris says increases in funding should go to the Office of Indian Energy and Bureau of Indian Affairs Division of Economic Development to help tribes with investment opportunities. Other leaders of South and Eastern tribes also asked Congress to honor its trust responsibilities. Congressman Ken Calvert told the witnesses their voices were being heard, saying the hearings were the beginning of dialogue to help make decisions in the national budget. Adding American Indian and Alaska Native programs are a nonpartisan priority. Some tribes fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline in court have dropped their appeal of a decision that lets construction continue. Officials say construction is complete. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
Opposition against the Dakota Access Pipeline continues even after camps near a construction site in North Dakota have dissolved. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe tried to get work halted by taking the fight against the project to federal court. In March, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg refused a request to force a stop to the work. Attorneys for the Sioux Tribes claim the construction threatens water from Lake Oahe that they consider sacred. Cheyenne Sioux Tribal leaders appealed Boasberg's ruling to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. They did not issue an emergency order to stop the project. The pipeline is now filled with oil and ready to begin commercial operations in 2 weeks. Late last month, Cheyenne River attorneys submitted a motion to dismiss their claim at appeals court. That motion was granted earlier this week. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A Michigan tribe is hosting a public symposium Friday night to discuss Enbridge Energy's Line 5 oil pipeline. The Grand Traverse Band is rallying to shut down the more than 60-year-old line, raising concerns about the environment and water. Oil is moving through the line, which sits on the bottom of the Great Lakes. In 2015, the band's tribal council passed a resolution calling on the state of Michigan to decommission the line. The company says it's been part of the state's economic and social fabric since it was built and remains in excellent condition. Tribal leaders, young people, lawmakers, business leaders, and community members are among those expected to take part in the event being held at the tribe's casino. Elders, youth, cultural knowledge holders, advocates, and policymakers are set to focus on Navajo language and culture at a summit next week at Dene College in Arizona. Navajo Council Delegate Nathaniel Brown says about 53% of Navajo households speak the native language, and the summit is intended to make sure it's kept alive. Sessions will examine traditional perspectives, urban issues, and challenges in education and healing from historical trauma. The summit also features guests from New Zealand who will share their language revitalization efforts. The 3-day event kicks off on Monday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Now faced support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Serving Juneau since 1978, Ron's Apothecary is providing medication information, nutritional supplements, and homeopathic remedies. More information at ronsapothecary.com.
A musician you won't forget. Gary Motley brings a lifetime of jazz to Juneau Jazz and Classics with a seductive style and lyrical touch on piano. He's played with Brubeck, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz. Now, Motley and his trio cap off the week with Jazz at the Jack Friday, May 19th at 7. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Gary Motley and his trio, music for the heart and soul.
We have the pleasure of being joined right now by Gary Motley. You're hearing that music in the background. Gary, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Happy to be here.
Welcome to Juneau. I hear from Reggie Schaap, who's here from Juneau Jazz and Classics, that you got to experience some sun.
We do.
So we're excited about that. Yeah. We never like to have people come into town and not know how beautiful it can be here, even although it's beautiful now in its own way, but... The idea of seeing the mountains is a good thing, right?
Absolutely. Right. It's just spectacular. It's spectacular, breathtaking. So, yeah, Monday and Tuesday, I got a chance to go to the glacier, and we've done some whale watching.
Got on the water, I was going to ask. Great.
Got on the water.
Terrific.
And saw the sea lions sunning themselves.
Very nice.
So I think animals and humans alike really took advantage of the sunshine.
Yeah. Now you're Atlanta. Is that kind of born and raised in Atlanta? Still live there, or where are your roots sort of from? There.
I'm based out of Atlanta now, but I was born and raised in Alabama.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, what was your early musical exposure? What do you remember the moments, the things that early inspired?
Absolutely.
Inspired you? Yeah.
Absolutely. My mom played piano, and my dad had a great appreciation for the blues. So we'd get up on Saturday mornings, and he'd have played the blues records for us, and then my mom was a big fan of classical music, and she was also a church pianist. So we were exposed to that, especially being in the South, to sacred music. And in our house, you had one of two options. You could play piano or sing, and I opted for the piano and chose to keep my mouth shut. And so it kind of went from there. But it was through that that I really developed my love and my passion for music.
And what was your dad's love of the blues? Where did that come from? Was that a contemporary thing for him, or was he dipping back a little bit into history for that?
It's more of a regional thing, especially if you look at the South, Alabama and Mississippi and that area, that blues is just a really, really prevalent art form. So it's almost commonplace, part of everyday life.
People playing it.
Oh, certainly. I remember
actually.
As a kid,
performing it.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, you know, you could sit out in the backyard and you'd hear the neighbors down the street with a blues guitar wailing away, you know, just it was a form of relaxation and enjoyment, you know, that you would hear a guitarist doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, having the opportunity to hear some of the local groups that would play in the area and around the region. So, yeah, it's just a very integral part of the Southern experience.
So you go from that sort of piano background, blues background, and then when I listen to your music, I hear a lot of kind of the bebop influences and those
Certainly.
Things. So how did you kind of learn about that or turn that corner, or how did you get involved in that area?
Those things came later when I was a teenager, through, first of all, through exposure with television and that sort of thing, which especially public radio, public television.
There you go.
You know,
yeah,
we heard.
We like to hear that.
Yes,
absolutely. We like to hear that.
Oh, let me tell you, when I was about 12 years old, our local public radio station from midnight to 1 a.m. would play jazz. And so I had my little radio with the earphone. You know, I'm supposed to be asleep, and I was listening to these broadcasts.
There used to be a thing called Jazz Place.
Yeah.
Was that it?
That's it.
I remember Jazz Place when I was working in Florida in the 90s. They would play Jazz Place, but it was a classic music. I played for a place called Classic 90.
Yeah.
And so that jazz music was put on after midnight, right?
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
Oh, that jazz music.
Yeah.
Such a funny thing to think about, but
yeah,
it was a great
the local
show.
Classical station in there for 1 hour a night, you know, they would have those shows. So through that, and then when I went to college, I decided that I wanted to do music as a profession. So through that, I started learning more about different styles. I traveled to New York and spent time in New York and working with various musicians there.
And what were sort of the years, what sort of to track the years that you were working, like when you were in New York and getting those influences? What?
The very first trip I made to New York was in 1985.
Well, I was going to say something in that range.
Mid-80s.
We're probably similarly aged, and so it's like that. It's a thing because you're dipping back.
Right.
I mean, really,
right.
your music's a callback to music that was, you know, just starting to happen in the 50s,
Absolutely.
The birth of cool, that kind of stuff was just starting to happen. And that was you were really calling back to that.
Yeah. You know, there was a renewed interest, especially in the early 80s, through a number of artists ranging from Terrence Blanchard to Wynton Marsalis and people like that. Also, record labels, Columbia Records, really started going after this young talent. I don't know if you remember the Young Lions and that sort of thing. So there was this whole movement of musicians that were in our age group who were starting to pursue this music. And also jazz education started to really take a turn and became more of a staple in our arts programs. So that was the big transition for me. Hearing people my own age who were also pursuing this music and doing it on that level. So I kind of, quote-unquote, joined the crusade and got involved in that. And through that, I started being exposed to the different types of jazz. At the same time, I was in school, you know, majoring in music, so that was the classical training that I got as well. So it was bringing all of those things together and fusing them together and then getting the experience of traveling and working with different artists and being on the road. And, you know, you get, as Chick Corea put it, you spend your time in the university of the streets, and
right.
You know, you sharpen your skills and grow from there.
Do you feel a pull? It's sort of like there's that plot of like that movie La La Land, right? Did you see it?
I did.
So that whole idea of, well, you can be a purist and live in that, you know, environment, or you can say, well, I'm going to be influenced by new stuff. Do you feel that pull back and forth, or did the music, how do you kind of fit the music that you do into being a contemporary artist, into being a creative artist in your own right?
Well, there are philosophies about growth and development in jazz that are really prevalent. And to kind of use some cliches, several people will say that in order to master the music, you have to walk in the master's footsteps. So you imitate and you really study and analyze the people that you admire and you respect in the music. I think the next step in that is deciding what your own voice is in that and deciding what it is that you feel you have to say and that you want to share. And that's the place that I arrived at after having done this for the number of years that I've done it, and deciding that, hey, I think I've got some ideas of my own here that I really feel strongly about and I want to share. So with the last two CDs that I've done, I really kind of made a movement in that direction, which was resulted in the title of my previous CD, which was Departure.
Did you feel there was a moment for you?
Yes.
You felt like this is I'm really discovering a voice here, and I'm
absolutely.
That's what I'm communicating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh. So what I do now with my audiences is I give them a little bit of both. You know, when you come to the concert, you're going to get the retrospective. You know, you're going to hear the traditional classic jazz that I feel people need to hear and experience
and love hearing.
And yeah, you know, absolutely,
sure, right,
absolutely.
Right,
that's why we call it classics.
I right,
mean, you know, they're timeless.
Got to play Stairway. If you're a Zeppelin, you're in classic rock. You got to play Stairway.
Oh yeah,
right?
They're not going to let you out of the arena without it. You know what I mean?
So giant steps.
Yeah,
you
got to
do it.
You know,
right.
Those things are a staple.
Right, right.
And but at the same time, saying where are we now? You know, and where are we going? And I do feel strongly that music is really in need of that. So while we pay respect to our heroes and to those people that we consider to be masters, I truly also believe, especially for the ones that have, you know, have already passed on and gone before us, they would want us to not only pay respect to the past, but they would encourage us to look forward and usher in the new things.
That's what they were doing.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's why we remember them. That's what was happening.
Exactly.
That was what was blowing our minds about
exactly.
what they did. Yeah, right.
So as a result, yes, with the new CD, No Reservation Required, that's kind of the message that we're putting there. That's hence the title. There's the obvious, No Reservation Required, what is that about? But it's not having any reservations about moving forward and being free and expressing what it is that you want to express and exploring your own creativity. So that's the underlying theme of the new record. So people coming to the concert tonight can expect to hear some of this new music that
yeah.
kind of reflects the overall, I think, just kind of spiritual climate of kind of where people are right now.
That's great.
And and trying to capture the essence of that. And sharing that with people.
Well, we'll hear one more track in a second, but Reggie, let's tell people how they can. Can people still go?
People can still go.
They can
still have tickets
okay.
available. You can get them at the Jack, of course. We'll be selling them at the door at Hearthside Books until they close at 7, or you can get them online at jazzandclassics.org. We've heard rumors that people think Richard Thompson is sold out tomorrow night. We've added 200 more chairs, so he is not sold out. So if you haven't gotten your Richard Thompson tickets either, you can pick them up tonight when you come to Jazz at the Jack with Gary Motley.
So much great music coming up. Gary Motley, such a pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for talking to us a little bit about music theory and what's inspired you. And let's listen to a little bit more. We've got the third cut off your track here called Sea Change. This is off of No Reservations Required, the second or third album of this latest kind of albums that you
This would be the second of
the
this
second
installment.
Yeah, of this installment and Sea Change. This is Gary Motley. Anything you want to maybe the folks who are playing on this track, that kind of thing, want to give a nod to them or
yes.
Yeah.
Certainly. The bassist who is on this is Billy Thornton, who is joining me also here and will be performing with us tonight.
Great.
On joining us tonight will also be a drummer from Pennsylvania, Justin Chisarek. And although he's not on this recording, the drummer on the recording that you're going to be listening to is Emra Kotan. And Teodros Avery, who's a wonderful saxophonist.
I'm putting you on the spot. I know, right? That's good. You're getting it.
Absolutely. And he's a wonderful saxophonist who recorded with the late Amy Winehouse and Brand New Heavies and some folks.
Very
like
cool.
That, so.
All right. This is some Gary Motley available to go to tonight to see live. Gary, thanks so much for coming in.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you.
All right. music from Gary Motley there playing tonight, Juno Jazz and Classics, and thanks to him for coming in. All right, we got, should I say it?
Yeah, say
speaking
it.
Of Motley, here's a Motley crew coming in. All right, Reed Stoops, Eric Boras, and Jamie Waste are all here. Going to be talking about a new, really pretty exciting thing, a new fund here set up for parks, trails, and recreation in Juneau. I know, Eric, we've talked a little bit about this. You're very excited about this, but Jamie, as representative of the Juneau Community Foundation, let us know what's going on there.
So it's a new field of interest fund that the foundation is setting up, and you know, Juneauites are very active and love their trails and love their parks and outdoor recreation opportunities. And the foundation for years has kind of had a vision about wanting to be in a position to have greater impact in this area. In other words, be able to assist the community on enhancing our trails or, you know, improving our parks or creating new opportunities in Juneau. So we've established a fund. We're at the very beginning of it. We're literally just now starting to, you know, raise funds for the fund. But the goal, the long-term goal, is to have an endowment that's going to be able to kick out money annually so that we can partner with organizations like Trail Mix on enhancing our trail system. The short-term kind of project here is to – we don't want to wait however many years it might be before we have an endowment. So we have a near-term, you know, strategy here to raise funds and to do stuff, to have an impact in the community. And trails is an early priority for us in the fund. And Reed's going to talk for a moment about trails and why trails.
Does Reed know that?
I think he does.
Okay, he's good with this, Reed. Yeah, let us know how that's involved. I mean, the one thing it raises to my mind is it's so cool to have an organization like Trail Mix in the town already set up, ready to go, and ready to be able to accept these funds and use it in creative and ways and have priorities already. So that
exactly.
Seems like something that's so cool it's already set up.
Yeah, that was our strategy in parks, recreation, and trails. We naturally decided to partner with Trail Mix, and Trail Mix already has a great program, and they have a crew, and they've been active. And what we'd like to do is provide greater funding for them so we can accelerate some of the plans that they already had. And the premier project that we decided to go for is the Treadwell Ditch Trail, because along with Perseverance, it's probably the sections that are completed are extremely popular, and we figured if we completed the whole thing, it would be just a gem of a trail in the community, not only for locals, but probably would attract visitors as well.
Got a historic, you know, ground behind it. It's also such a cool, like, long,
right.
it goes
from Eagle
trail.
Crest all the way across to Douglas. It's fairly you know, just gently sloping.
And relatively quiet, as you said. Yeah. So it's also kind of mixed use as a result, right? I mean, there's a lot of mountain bikers that hit that trail as
runners,
well.
Runners, mountain bikers, skiers during the winter.
Yeah,
a lot of people up there. And especially with the improvements we made, there's to some of the sections, there's moms with strollers up there. There's all sorts of use.
And is part of the idea to also get some access, like midpoint access trails and things like that? Because that seems like that's one of the things that's like,
yeah,
it's like
some long stretches.
We're working on Bonnie Dunes got that section up, but it's pretty muskeggy.
We're working on cleaning that up. The Forest Service and the city and Trail Mix are working on that, and we're looking at putting some more access points in just so we can access the whole thing. But getting back to the Community Foundation helping us out, it's really great for Trail Mix because we're used to going after the money, and for someone to come to us with money is spectacular. But
it's like weird.
Yeah.
Right? What's going on?
I know. It's normal. But yeah,
you don't answer that phone.
Yeah. But yeah, we put a lot of work into it over the last couple of years. We're putting some more work into it this summer, putting some major bridges in, and so it's great for the Community Foundation to come in and they're capping it off, and it's great to see the motivation from the community to get this done because they want it done. It's a priority. A lot of people are excited to be able to go from one end to the other without getting off their bike, and yeah.
So. And that happened as a result of kind of talking to Trail Mix or talking to other kind of constituents or trail users in town about what would be sort of priorities.
Right. What we did is we're trying to establish what we're calling community advisors or community champions for trails. So Mike McCrill and I, both on the JCF board, took on Parks, Rec, and Trails as kind of our project to get going. And we recruited other people from the community to help us, all of whom, you know, are active trail users, and they're willing to spend some time and effort to help us raise money. So we've got half a dozen people that are working with us on trails. We're going to have a similar group of people working with us on local parks. And for the long term, we're looking at a hut-to-hut program on the ridgetops around town, which is something that we've talked about for 30 years but have never accomplished.
That's so cool, though.
That'll be a longer-term
project. And harnessing the community. Otherwise, you're waiting for these grant cycles, sure. Diminishing grant cycles, really, with federal and state to either be available or not. And the part of the vision here is the community loves these access opportunities to the wilderness. And so the foundation can kind of bring that focus and that attention. You know, back to the Treadwell, as long ago as 1993, the city had identified it as a top, if not the top, trail priority in the community. So 1993, and to this day, it's still considered one of the top priorities for trail renovation. So TrailMix has done great work. We know that for locals, it's super popular. We also know that for the visitor industry, you know, the whole idea of promoting independent travel and having people stay in Juneau and not just be in a hurry and on their way to other locations in Southeast Alaska. It's a real community asset, the trail system. It is a world-class trail system. So we see this like a real long-term investment in the community to keep improving the trails. And through this fund, we hope to do that.
Are there challenges specifically about that trail that you have to worry about? It's a kind of a corduroy track, right?
So there's a lot of historic structures that are still there. We want to preserve those. We don't want to impact those in any way because that's part of the appeal of the trail.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a historic feature of Juneau, so we want to make sure we don't impact those. And just like everything else about it, there's a lot of different uses out there, and we want to try and keep everyone as happy as possible. So we don't want to make it too smooth and flat, because then the mountain bikers find it boring. We don't want to make it too rough, because then the hikers don't enjoy it. So it's balancing a lot of that.
Are there certain techniques you use on it? Am I right that as I remember, I haven't hiked it for a long time. But it was kind of this, right? It was kind of
part of it. There's all sorts of trail construction types that they used when they were originally constructing it. So there's quite a bit of corduroy. There's a lot of rock that because they blasted parts of the ditch itself out, and they used that to build the trail. And we've been going in there. We've been adding a lot of gravel to the muddy parts, the muskegee parts, because there used to be planking across that. So we've replaced that with gravel. So yeah, ideally, it'll all be mountain bikeable at some point or another, but a challenge, but not too hard. Yeah,
for the advanced mountain mm-hmm. bikers, they can do it.
Yeah, right. A few staircases we had to put in a couple of years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some massive streams and waterfall type things that go across there that required real.
And that's kind of the first thing that that's one of the projects we're excited about this summer is we're going to be putting in three big glulam bridges that are engineered, and we're going to fly them with helicopters. So we're putting one over Paris Creek. So if you go up the Mount Jumbo Trail, Mount Bradley Trail, it's its real name, to where it intersects the Treadwell Ditch, take a right. The first crossing there, the only big crossing, is Paris Creek. So we're putting in, that's on city property, and we're working with them to put a bridge in there. That should be going in end of June is when it should be done. Mm-hmm. And then we're putting in two more bridges. One, if you go up the Dan Muller Trail, take a right on the Treadwell Ditch, the first stream is Cowie Creek, and that has a bridge over it, but it's delaminating, and so we're going to replace that. And then the next one is Eagle Creek, and we're going to replace it. I put a new one over that. There was one that failed probably 10, 15 years ago or something. And then we have funding to buy more bridges, but we don't have funding to install them. So that's where the mm-hmm. community can help, because we'll have these bridges in town, but we need some money to get them up there and in place. So,
well, Jamie, how can people get involved? Can people become a part of this?
Just go to the website, junocf.org. You'll see right there on the homepage, there's a kind of a special projects. There's a couple of things that are spotlighted on the homepage. This new fund is spotlighted, and actually there's quite a bit of information about the fund and kind of the vision of the fund. Donate button is there. So if you're ready to make a contribution. And just real quickly, you know, people think about philanthropy, and a lot of times people hear that word and they think, oh, they're talking about big money and big this, big that. Philanthropy is anybody and everybody giving whatever. So whatever contribution. So this is, yes, we're going to be looking for some large contributions to this to really raise the funds. We're also looking for a real grassroots community effort. And we've already had people sending in $50, $25 or or whatever, just saying, I like the idea, you know. And poor Eric here is running the shop Trail Mix seasonal crew. I mean, some people may say, I mean, Eric does not have a development staff, right? There is no kind of development function arm there, really. There's
just me.
It's just Eric.
Me and the strong young people out in the woods.
I'm aware. So they accomplished this incredible thing. So this is the partnering that we're doing here. You know, we thought, how can the Community Foundation have an impact here in a positive way for trails in the community?
And I think it's a really good point you're making, because I think people think of the Juneau Community Foundation like, well, that's a foundation. They've got their money. It's all set. But it's the idea of it is to contribute, is to become a part of it. And maybe you have a significant amount that you want to make sure that is a part of Juneau for a long time. Or maybe you have a small amount that you want to give, or maybe you have time or other things to offer. And I think that Juneau Community Foundation is there, ready to kind of accept that help and accept that contribution from people.
Yeah, this fund, as Reed can attest, we need to raise the funds to actually have this fund. So we're just at the beginning stages.
Right, and we've got some good opportunities. We decided to partner with the City and Borough of Juneau, with the Forest Service. There's a Forest Service Foundation that's going to be in town pretty soon that's offered us the possibility of about a $50,000 matching grant. So if we can raise another $50,000, that'll give us close to $100,000 that we can use for the project. Rasmussen Foundation is another foundation that generally has been helpful when asked to provide matching funds for parks recreation projects. So that's another opportunity. So we're pretty sure for probably the first $100,000 that we can raise, we'll be able to match it with an equal amount of money. That'll go a long way toward the Treadwell project.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for coming in, letting us know about anything else that need to know for folks to get involved or to track the progress.
I just encourage people to get up on the Treadwell Trail, mm-hmm. because if you haven't hiked any of the renovated trail from recent years, the improvement is amazing. And that's what this project is about, to have 12 miles of that kind of improved mm-hmm. trail.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Jamie, Eric, Reed, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
All right,
thanks.
Coming up next, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 19th of May, 2017. It's the birthday of Johns Hopkins, born on a tobacco plantation in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, 1795, earned his fortune in the dry goods business, also bottled moonshine, earned a great fortune, and left his money to found the Johns Hopkins University and the Johns Hopkins Hospital. It's the birthday of Malcolm X, born Malcolm Little in Omaha in 1925. When he was 4 years old, living in East Lansing, white supremacists set fire to the family's home. East Lansing police and firefighters, all of them white, came to the house, but they stood by and watched it burn. When he was 6, his father was murdered. Police declared the death a suicide, which invalidated the family's life insurance. The boy's mother never recovered from the murder, went into a mental institution when he was 12. When he was 14, he told his high school teacher he wanted to be a lawyer. The teacher told him to be realistic and think about becoming a carpenter, and the boy dropped out of school the following year. He was arrested for larceny, 1946, went to prison. An older inmate encouraged him to use his time to educate himself, so he started reading books from the prison library. To improve his vocabulary, he copied out an entire dictionary, word for word, and he began a correspondence with Elijah Muhammad, the founder of the Nation of Islam, and became one of their most prominent organizers. He took the surname X to symbolize his lost African heritage. In 1964, Malcolm X broke with the Nation of Islam when he learned that his mentor was having multiple affairs contradicting his own teachings. Malcolm made the Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, where for the first time he related to people of all races, came back to America with a new message, dictated his life story to the writer Alex Haley. The book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, came out the next year, shortly after Malcolm X was assassinated while speaking at a rally in Manhattan. He was 39 years old. And it's the birthday of the playwright Lorraine Hansberry, born Chicago 1930, author of the play A Raisin in the Sun, opened on Broadway in 1959. It was a big success. First Broadway play to be written by a black woman, and for most of the audience, it was the first time they'd seen the life of a normal black family portrayed on stage or in movies. Here's a poem for today by Thomas Lux, Ode to the Joyful Ones, with a quote from an Anglican prayer, Shield your joyful ones. That they walk, even stumble among us, is reason to praise them or protect them. Even the sound of a lead slug dropped on a lead plate, even that for them is music. Because they bring laughter's brief amnesia, because they stand talking, taking pleasure in others with their hands on the shoulders of strangers and the shoulders of each other. Because you don't have to tell them to walk toward the light. Because if there are two pork chops, they will serve you the better one. Because they will give you the crutch off their backs. Because when there are two of them together, their shining fills the room. Because you don't have to tell them to walk toward the light. Ode to the Joyful Ones by Thomas Lux from To the Left of Time, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turned cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
NOAA Fisheries reminds you, please do not feed Steller sea lions. Feeding sea lions is illegal and could result in aggressive sea lion behavior. Clean your fish and discard your fish waste out of reach of Steller sea lions. Keep your distance. Stay at least 100 yards away from these animals. Feeding, harassing, or harming Steller sea lions is illegal under federal law. To report an incident, please call NOAA Enforcement at 1-800-853-1964.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. Bill Merks here with me as well from, well, you're going to be talking about the Writers' Workshop. You're not from the Writers' Maybe you're from the Writers' Workshop, sort of.
Sure.
You're representing. I will be at the event.
You'll
How's
be
that? At the Writers' Workshop, and you know about it.
I do indeed.
So let's fill people in a little bit. The Writers' Workshop,
sure.
Where is it going to be happening?
Beast Flow Studios.
Okay.
You know where that is?
No.
It's at 215 Ferry Way.
Oh, okay. Wow. So just right downtown.
Yeah, Marine Park, and take a left and head up over that wobbly piece of concrete in the sidewalk, and
that
it's across the street from there.
That one weird piece of sidewalk.
You'll know where you are, right? I'm in the area, right?
Right. So what happens at these, or what's happening at this one?
Well, I'm with Wish Kanadi, and we put out these kind of events every 3 months. We put out a writing workshop. This one is going to be geared more toward performance. So we're hoping people will come to the event with poetry or monologues or some, you know, whatever they would like to learn how to perform or to work on their performance skills. Bring it to the event on Sunday. It's from 1 until 4. We have a couple of folks, Erica Bergren and Austin Noea Tagaban, will be teaching the course.
Oh, so. Very cool. So that's a really interesting thing to it's not just about writing and expressing yourself on the written page, but it's also how to then take that off the written page and kind of, you know, so there's a little bit of an acting component.
A little acting, a little improv, a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I think it all kind of melds together pretty nicely. So it'll be a good opportunity for people to, you know, not so much to work on the writing side of things. We're expecting, again, pieces to be either finished or in progress and get up and you know, getting comfortable with the performance side of things. So,
does that apply for all kinds of writing? I mean, the poetry and slam poetry kind of genre, it's become a thing that it's almost expected. Like you write a poem, and many of them are kind of made to perform. They're made to speak out loud.
So, yeah.
But
yeah.
Often, if you're like novel writing or if you're writing in other ways, you don't really think about, well, someday I'm going to get up and read a passage of this necessarily.
I don't write. In that particular genre, but I wouldn't think you would, although, you know, books on tape, books on disc are out there, and so someone is reading that work.
Yeah.
So you want it to flow and do all those magical things that writing can do.
Right, and how many writers, you know, obviously people are ask writers to read passages all the time and do those kinds of things all the time. It'd be
David Sedaris, for example.
Yes,
right?
That's exactly, you know, right.
Gets up and performs a piece that was written for the page, and, you know, it goes from there.
So. Yeah, yeah, right. And so what do you think are some of the kind of keys to people having, kind of getting a key, I don't want to say keys to success, but
sure,
keys to being
sure.
able to kind of do that in a way that's effective. What do you think are some of the things that people should be thinking about?
Do it whether you're frightened to death or not.
That's number one, just do it.
Yeah, I think that, like anything, I think, you know, once you're out there and you're committed to it, that it's going to happen, you know. For me, I like to think that the event's already taken place and I'm already past it, so all the nervousness and stress is gone. You know, you're just doing it. You don't have to worry too much about that.
Back up on that a little bit, because when you say the event's already happened, do you mean you're just kind of, do you literally think the event's already happened because you've already written it? Like the event of writing has already happened?
Yeah.
And so therefore, speaking it is just, that's just.
That's the icing on the
cake,
you know.
It's already written down. It's already set in stone.
Right. I mean, you might improv a little bit with it, but for me, you know, the event's already in the past. I mean, you already know you're going to read, right? You already know you're going to perform, so get over it and just do it. You know, it works for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what works for other folks.
Right.
But this event is geared toward helping people get that confidence, those. For me, I like to think of it as a life skill, being able to speak in public to people, whether you're performing or not. It's just an opportunity to get up and get comfortable in front of a group. There are only going to be maybe 15 people in the room. We have room for 12 folks who want to come and perform, and they'll be the instructors, and I'll be there as a photographer and maybe doing a little bit of something. I don't know quite what yet, but it'll be a small, intimate group. But like any Wish Canada event, it's very supportive. We're here to make you comfortable. You're going to succeed no matter what you do. It's just a process. So,
is it a place where people who aren't even necessarily writing or have something they've written themselves or actively writing could go and kind of
absolutely.
Just bring something that they...
Absolutely. Yeah, we had an event earlier this year at Perseverance Theater. It was an open mic at Perseverance Theater. So we work closely at times of the year with those folks over there. And this is, again, an opportunity if you're working on a play, if just a monologue, if you've got something you want to vent about, you're giving a speech in 2 weeks, you know, here's an opportunity to come in
and
share
something.
That.
You want to
do some improv, whatever you want to do, here's an opportunity to get in front of a small group of people, get the positive feedback that you may be looking for, and just help us help you, kind of a thing. So,
great. Well, if people are interested, how can they kind of get in touch with it and make sure it happens?
Well, a couple of ways. You can always find us on Facebook. If you just type in Woosh, W-O-O-S-H, we come to the top of the page. You can send an email to junopoetryslam@gmail.com. Christy Erickson will respond to that. There are posters up around the community. I'm on Facebook. Christy's on Facebook. You can get a hold of us any number of ways.
Okay. So. And then in the dates again and all that kind of?
It's this Sunday.
Okay.
This Sunday from 1 to 4.
Okay.
Get there a little bit early. Parking is a little bit of a challenge right now downtown.
Yeah.
So it is what it is.
Right.
Get there a little early. We'll have breaks. We'll have some snacks. And, you know, we'll just get to know each other.
Okay. Sounds great. It's the Writer's Workshop. It's happening this Sunday.
This Sunday at Beast Flow Studio, 1 to 4.
1 to 4. And, Bill Merck, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
We'll let you know that it is a $20 admission to participate.
Sure.
And if you want to pay $35 for this session, you get the 3-hour class and a Season 7 T-shirt. Throw that in as well.
All right, terrific.
Which was designed by Dawson Walker. It's pretty cool.
All right, very cool.
And a little bit of a way to
support the work that you guys are doing and keep the performances coming.
Next month we have our big summer showcase. We'll talk a little bit more about that next month, but it's at the Rockwell again this year upstairs on Saturday, June 24th.
All right.
So there'll be a lot of information coming out about that. 5 very strong voices again. We'll pull out the stops for that one. But that's why we charge money for some of these things, so we can help.
Yeah, keep it going.
Cover our costs.
Keep it rolling.
Keep
yeah.
these events going on the monthly, yeah. monthly schedule here. So.
Great. Bill, thanks so yeah. much for coming in.
Thanks,
Andy.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, bye. Absolutely. Coming up, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. The call of this water bird, the pied-billed grebe, is unusual, isn't it? Their nests are unusual, too. Little platforms of plant material that float on water, hidden behind vegetation. We're with Martin Muller, an expert who loves unraveling the mysteries of pied-billed grebes.
Well, there's the nest. There it is. We didn't even see it because we were standing on the wrong side of the cattail. So if we step back a little bit, without the bird seeing us directly staring at it, it'll just carry on.
The birds are diving for decaying plant material, picking it up from the bottom of the lake, piling it up until it forms a floating mass.
Now this will gradually sink, so they keep adding onto it. And when the first egg is laid, it can be laid in a puddle of water. It'd be that flimsy a structure. Then what they do is they add on more plant material on the side of them, the rim of the nest, and then as they turn the eggs, they'll actually grab plant material and tuck it underneath the eggs, and that way they raise the eggs out of the water until they're high and dry after a couple of days. Then one of the fascinating things is the dead and decaying plant material actually gives off heat that helps some of the incubation of the eggs. Not completely, but it helps a little bit.
You can learn more and see photos of a nest and of newly hatched pied-billed grebes at birdnote.org.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you, and Vanya Kim has joined me, and Elizabeth is here as well. Thanks, you guys, for joining. They're here from the Alaska Youth Choir, and you got a performance coming up this weekend?
We do. Thank you for having us.
Sure.
Tomorrow, the Alaska Youth Choir is doing their spring concert at in Auk Bay at Chapel by the Lake, 6 p.m.
So is this something, Elizabeth, this is something you kind of practice and build up to the spring concert, right? Is this something you guys work on, right? How many songs do you have to kind of know? You have to know
around 5 or 4.
4 or 5. So not too bad. You can kind of get it done, right? And this is Richard Moore is the new director, right?
Yes. So we have a new music director this year, Mr. Moore, who is also the music teacher at Juno Douglas High School. And he's done a wonderful job this year just teaching the kids and having fun with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was telling you, Richard Moore is my daughter's choir teacher in high school, and she was in Alaska Youth Choir and all that. So it's this long tradition that's been happening in Juneau, right?
Yeah, the Alaska Youth Choir has been around for longer than 20 years, and a lot of kids have learned and grown, and some of them actually are one of our board members. She was in the Alaska Youth Choir when she was younger and came back, and now she's part of our board.
That's cool. And then sometimes there's opportunities to travel, and there's opportunities to perform all over the place and bring people who also are great singers to perform in town. All those kinds of exchanges happen.
Yeah, I mean, our choir has gone to local places, but they've also gone as far as Scotland, New York, Italy. And actually, in a couple of weeks, the first week of June, they're going to do a Southeast tour and visit Skagway and perform there on the train platform.
Wow.
And also perform in Haines, too.
Cool. So Elizabeth, have you traveled with the youth choir before?
No, not yet.
But you're going to travel to Haines and Skagway? Now, have you been there before?
No, I don't think
so. Oh, so is it cool? It's going to be cool?
Yeah.
Are you going to do the same songs? Are you kind of practicing on the songs that you're going to do in Haines and Skagway for the spring concert, or are they different songs?
I think so. We're going to be singing the
same one. So can you tell me which ones are the songs you guys have been working on for the spring concert?
We're working on a song from Lilo and Stitch.
All right. That's
and
fun.
A song. Well, we're also working on one from Beauty and the Beast, but we haven't really finished it.
That's okay.
Not really working on it.
Work in progress.
We're also working on a song called Rattle My Rattle.
Rattle My Rattle?
Yeah.
Is that from a show, or is that just a fun song?
I think it's just a song.
Okay.
And then there's a lot more. I can't name them.
That's yet. Cool. That's fine. That was good. That was more than I could have remembered. That's great. So do you have a favorite among those?
I think my favorite might be the Lilo and Stitch.
The Lilo and Stitch one. What's the name of that song? Do you remember?
Hawaiian Roller Coaster.
Hawaiian Roller Coaster.
Yeah.
And so is there lots of different parts of the song? Like, do you have to do a lot of range kind of work?
Yeah,
and
the older kids are doing the alto and something else, and we're doing the soprano, I think.
Yeah, because it seems like if you're younger, your voice is a little higher.
Yeah.
Right? So you kind of do soprano, and then you work to alto, and then tenor. Is that the other one?
I don't know.
Maybe tenor? I don't know. I'm sort of remembering from what I used to say.
Boise tenor. Yeah.
Boise tenor, right? I'm going to get into the down there bass. No? No kids doing that yet? A little bit?
Yeah.
Well, that's fun. So what do you like best about doing choir? Why is it something that you really like doing?
I like doing it because I'm doing it with my friend, and we're having a lot of fun. It's her first year, but it's my
third year.
Oh, that's cool. So you're kind of introducing her to choir. And
yeah, she likes it a lot.
That's cool. And you're getting her used to it. And
we both do violin, so we kind of know the notes in the song. So it's kind of fun.
Oh, that's cool. So do you read music?
Yeah, a little bit.
So when you do you guys get the music in the choir?
Yeah, we get the sheets of music.
And then, so when you look at the sheets of music in choir, do you kind of know how it's going to sound? Or is it hard to do that?
Well, it also comes with the words on the bottom, so I usually just follow the words.
And right, and then
it helps a lot when Mr. Moore plays it on the piano, so I can kind of think about how it's going to go, like I do with the violin.
So is there a part of choir? Elizabeth is dominating this. I'm just so fascinated.
I know.
This is okay with you, Bonnie. We're going to keep talking to Elizabeth. But so is there a part of choir like that you think is kind of the hardest thing to do? Like, what's the hardest part?
Well, there's not that many hard things, but some hard stuff is when we're saying the song, and we have, like, a lot of tongue twisters because we're speaking Hawaiian.
Oh, yeah, sure. Like, you have to enunciate the words, right? You have to make sure people understand the words. And so you can't just garble the words and stuff. And so, especially if it's a different language, that's really hard, yeah. But sometimes I remember, like, singing in choir. I used to sing in choir a long time ago, and I remember this stuff was, like, you always wanted to just sing the melody. Like, you knew the song, so you just wanted to sing the song. And that's not what choir is, right?
Yeah.
Choir is you have to play your part, and then the whole choir coming together is what creates the music, and it's layered, and it's all. So that's an interesting part of it. But maybe you already experienced that playing violin.
Yeah.
Is that true?
A little bit.
When you play violin, do you play in groups, in larger groups, like orchestras?
I've been playing with this little mini fiddler group. We just finished ours this year, but I'm also taking private lessons.
Yeah, okay. Like the private lessons, like maybe you're the one playing the whole thing, so that's kind of like you have to hear it all. But when you play in a group, right, you have to fit your part into what these other parts are doing, and that's sort of the same thing as what happens in choir.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my theory. I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
It's a good theory.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me about when the performance is happening and how people can attend and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's at Chapel by the Lake in Auk Bay, 6 p.m. tomorrow. It's going to be just really fun music.
Okay, yeah, I'm excited about Lilo and Stitch. And are you guys going to do the Beauty and the Beast number? Or maybe
I don't know.
Well, what happened? Does it just get a little complicated?
I think we're probably not going to.
That one's a little, maybe that's back burner.
Yeah, we only did like the first two lines.
Oh, well, that's not enough. I don't think that's enough. That's like 15 seconds of a song. We're gonna have to do something else. Okay.
One of the things that the Alaska Youth Choir kids did this year, actually just last weekend, was they joined the Juno Douglas High School performance of Whistled on the Wind, and they they were actually the children's chorus.
Cool.
So it was really just a wonderful collaborative fun thing for the kids to do.
And so that's a part written for children to sing
and
already.
Young children.
Yeah,
do it. So
right.
It was really great.
That's really cool. Yeah. Do you have a favorite thing that's happened while you've been for 3 years you've sung with choir? Do you have a favorite thing you've gotten to do singing with choir?
My favorite thing was probably the folk festival. They sang at the folk festival.
That's a lot of people watching, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big crowd. And what song did you sing?
We just sang. We had the prep, the intermediate, and the advanced. And we sing all of our songs together. And like the prep did their songs, and then we did our songs with the advanced. And then we got off, and then we got to listen to the advanced.
Oh, so that's cool. Yeah. So you got to hear how they were performing as well.
Yeah.
And got to cheer for them, I'm sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was good. Okay. And so that's fun. Well, the Folk Festival is such a great thing that happens here every year. That's a really cool thing you guys got to perform there. Well, great. Well, it's the Alaska Youth Choir performance. It's happening
tomorrow,
Chapel by the Lake.
6 p.m.
All right, 6 p.m. Any charge for it?
Yes, it's $10 for adults and I think $5 for kids.
Okay.
So come out and support our kids.
Yeah.
Sing.
Sounds great. Okay, Elizabeth and Vanya, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great show. That's the show for today. We've got numerous rain showers in the forecast for today and tonight. Lows around 40 degrees for tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. Rain, sometimes heavy, is in the forecast with highs in the mid-50s and lows in the mid-40s. Not such a great forecast, but what the heck? Southeast Alaska, we're used to it, right? We're tough. That's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Andy Klein with you for this Friday, Juneau afternoon. Have a great weekend, everyone.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT.